Adequate notice of this meeting was given by posting written notice prominently on the bulletin board in the office of the Board of Education, 65 McCampbell Road, Homedale, New Jersey, the district website, and sent to four district schools. The mailing and or hand delivery of said notice is as designated newspapers, Asbury Park Press, Independent, the PLG, PSA, PSG, PSA, PTSO, SAB presidents, and student representatives to the board. Filing with the clerk of Homedale Township Police Headquarters and Public Library. Meetings of the board are open to the public and all members of the community should feel free to participate. There are two opportunities for the public to speak. The first is at the beginning of the meeting for agenda items only, and the second is at the end of the meeting for other items. Any individual desiring to speak shall give his or her name, address, and the group, if any, that is represented. The presentation shall be as brief as possible with no more than 3 minutes per individual. There are certain matters that may be brought before the board that cannot be immediately addressed in public. Such matters may be referred by the president to a board committee and or to the superintendent for consideration and or resolution. The board vests in its president or other presiding officer authority to terminate the remarks of any individual if he or she deems it in the interest of those present to do so. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Urbanski.
Here.
Mrs. Ng.
Here.
Mr. Sokol is absent. Mr. Reddy.
Here.
Mrs. Bramante.
Here.
Mr. Wall.
Here.
Mr. Hammer.
Here.
Dr. Kaur.
Here.
Mrs. Tosillo.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Can we have the flag salute, please?
Pledge allegiance to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're going to have three presentations today. The first is going to be the Start Strong Disaggregated Scores by Denise Rubel.
Good evening, board and public. I'm not Denise Rubel, but I'm going to introduce her. So just to give some context to our presentation, we did present to the board in November the first Start Strong data. At the time, it was not disaggregated. It was just straight scores by population, not separated populations. We now have that data. So we are going to show it to the board and the public. And please feel free to ask questions at the end of the presentation. So I'm presenting Denise Rubel. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you, Dr. Charney. As Dr. Charney indicated, we're going to take a look at these Start Strong disaggregated data. So I know he established a little context. I just want to build on that. Remember that this is data from an assessment that students took in October, and the information from that assessment was going to give us some insight into their readiness to learn the current course or grade level work that they are in now. So that's an important context to keep in mind. Okay, just as a reminder, the Start Strong assessments were created in response to COVID-19 and in a response to a lack of data on the state level from state assessments that had been postponed. They're intended to provide a snapshot of the amount of support a student is likely to need based on how they performed on that assessment at that one point in time. So again, context around the data that we're looking at. And just as a reminder, it is not meant to replace any other assessments. And so we'll talk about that. But keep in mind, in addition to Start Strong, in the fall, our students baseline through other assessments, grades 1 through 6 and WEA MAP, grades 7 through 12, Linkit, Benchmark A, Our students in grades 4 to 6 participating in our math pilot, the iReady diagnostic. Our students in science programs where it's grade appropriate inner orbit assessments. Matt, can you advance that slide? I don't think my clicker's working. Okay, and so Matt, if you can click on that analysis for me, please. And then Matt, I think I'm gonna need your help. I don't think it's responding. So if you could just go back, thank you. So let me just explain. This is a report that was prepared by Linkit, and it will give us, again, the disaggregated data. On pages 1 through 10, you will see the same data that we presented in November, just presented by them in a similar format, charts and the graphs. What I do want to mention is remember that November, that was preliminary data. This is the published data. It is possible if you compare them side by side, those numbers are slightly off. That could be where the system determined, you know, a score was invalid. So just so you know, in November, those published, and that's good right there, Matt, thank you. November, preliminary data, the data found in this and reported for us in the charts and graphs through Linkit is what is called the published data. Section 2, which begins on page 10 in the report, now does the demographic analysis for us. So Matt, if you could go to page 11, and you're gonna go down the bottom and zoom in onto all grades. And if you just slide it up a little bit. So now in the graph will present an analysis of all students, all grades who took Start Strong in the fall. What's important to keep in mind is what percent of our population each of those graphs represent. So I'll do it a couple times and then you'll, so we say in graph number 1, which will be ELA and the subgroup race, we have to remember when we're looking at the graph that 18%, oh, Matt, can you stay on that chart just for a second? And sorry, I tricked you. We need to keep in mind when we're looking at the graph that will come in a minute, that when we speak about students whose race is identified as Asian, of the students who took Start Strong, 18% have the reported race Asian. Black, 1%. Hispanic, 8%. Multiple, I'm getting old, my eyes in the gym. Multiple, 5%. Other, 0%, but remember that's actually 6 students. But percent, it comes out 0%. White, 71%. So now if we go to the graph, what the graph is now showing us is of the students who took Start Strong and who are represented by these racial groups, the percent of those students who, based on that test, the information is telling us they require strong support, some support, or less support. Okay, so represented by the red, the yellow, the green. Okay, so for ELA, for our racial groups, we see that for 3 of our subgroups, their performance is relatively in the same range. Okay, now, important to keep in mind, we're going to go through all the rest of these. Remember that this is giving us a snapshot in October, students coming in. This is really giving us a snapshot of what they retained from the previous year. Start Strong assessed the previous year standards, right? To give us an insight into what they may be ready to do in the current year. So that's important to keep in mind. Okay, Matt. Okay, so now the next then is math for the subgroups by race. And again, in some cases you'll see that the percentages will stay fairly consistent. Where you see the discrepancy in the percentages,
Denise, can you bring that slide, Matt, can you bring that slide down a little? I just wanted to see what the titles are at the top.
Oh, sure. No, he wants to see.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Right, so that is Start Strong, Mathematics Subgroup Race. Okay, so if we go to the bottom, and the reason why I'm going to the bottom, Mr. Reddy, is because the graph will represent all of our students. But still, you have some disaggregated. This is shared. You can look at this, certainly reach out with questions. But the graphs represent all students who took Start Strong. So that will be the chart at the bottom of the each of those. That will be the information at the bottom of each of those charts. It's just important to frame when you see the graph so that you understand the number of students that you might be looking at. Okay, good. All right, if you can go to the graph then. Okay, so mathematics, disaggregated by race. Okay, so you see that information again, remember representing students who took Start Strong, whose racial background is in the categories that are listed there, how they appeared at that point in time on Start Strong. Was there an indication they would need strong support, some support, or less support as they moved into the learning for this current year? Okay. They do not. Remember that again, it's representative of students who took Start Strong and Mr. Ready with valid scores. Okay. All right, Matt, any other questions? Okay, so the next one then, so just let's just frame that before we go down. So the next one is Start Strong, disaggregated by race, and this would be our science, our students, the scores for our students on the science assessment. So if we go to the bottom of the chart, remember the graph is going to represent all students who took the assessment. I just want that frame of reference because you'll see as we move forward, in some cases, the number of students who took a certain assessment, for example, science. Not all students who took Start Strong took the science. It was only required in specific grades. And so therefore, you're going to see the numbers will go down, those percentages will change. That's important to keep in mind when you look at the graph. Okay, so if we go to the graph. Okay, so this is our Start Strong data for our subgroups by race for the assessment that they took in the fall. The other thing I wanted to mention then is, remember earlier I said the students took additional assessments. We take the Start Strong data and we look at that in relation to other assessments. We looked at Start Strong, we looked at Fall Map, we looked at Fall Linkit, we looked at Fall iReady. Where appropriate, we looked at the earliest assessments for Inner Orbit, because now we're looking to see, do we see a trend? We see here that with the science, there is opportunities for growth, but we're looking to see, is this an anomaly, or are there other data points that substantiate that in terms of science for the grade levels represented here, for the racial groups represented here, are we seeing trends? And then again, from the fall to the winter, winter to the spring, are we seeing that those students are growing in those areas, literacy, math, science, as they progress through the year? Okay, all right, next slide, Matt. Okay, so now this is where we change a little bit, because now the next disaggregation, and just, I'm not sure if we mentioned, this is a required presentation. Remember, Start Strong was a state required assessment. This presentation of this disaggregated data is a state requirement. So again, that just frames that a little bit. So now we're asked to look at gender. We're looking to see, based at that Start Strong, is there any discrepancies, any opportunities that are apparent to us when we look at the data in terms of gender? So now you want to remember, if you could just enlarge that a little bit. It's really my benefit, I think, as well. Okay, so we see of the students who took the ELA assessment for Start Strong, 48% female, 52% male. And so we go to the next graph. And then that is the disaggregated performance by gender on ELA. Okay, remembering that red, strong support, yellow, some support, green, less support. Okay, and again, we would be looking at Start Strong data and then looking at other sources to see if we see any kind of a trend from the baseline data, any kind of a trend as we go continue to go through the year, in terms of any kind of gender discrepancies on assessments. Okay, and the next one would then be the math. If you could just enlarge that for us. Again, we see the percents are the same, but just so you can have a frame of reference for the graph. So this is start strong by the subgroup gender for mathematics. And the graph, Matt, please. Okay, so again, the graph representing mathematics, and again, showing us some areas of opportunity in terms of the math, and we would be looking to look at this data in comparison to other assessments given in the fall as baselines, and then again in the winter, we've just completed winter assessments, to see, one, is this a trend? Two, are we seeing evidence of growth in these areas for our students? So again, I would say, I think, go back. Right. So you 15%. So again, we see a discrepancy like that. We're going to want to look at other sources of data. So we talk about triangulation of data. We are going to look for other sources of data that either confirm or refute this. Is this an anomaly? If it is, then we accept that as the anomaly. If we have other sources of data that support this, we need to look at this. We look at it curricularly. Is there something in the ELA curriculum that would suggest that there may be a bias, right? And that's, those are the questions then we have to ask. Is it a factor of materials? Is it a factor of... And again, no clear answer. Those are questions. When we say, when we handle data, we talk about notice wonder. What would we wonder or question about this, and how would we look to get answers? But any discrepancy, we're going to want to look at and see. This, you say a 7-point discrepancy, a 2-point discrepancy, we just say, is that what we see? Is that a general pattern? Is there something else that suggests the discrepancy is higher or lower? So any discrepancy we're going to look at, and we're going to look for other pieces of data that either confirm or refute what we're seeing.
Okay? If I may add, so with this particular graph, and again, what Denise said, we try to back it up with other our other testing platforms. But with this particular graph, I can tell you just anecdotally that our female students have a commanding presence in all our STEM courses, our math courses, our science courses, or they have a presence in our engineering courses. I think I shared with the board that we were the number one public school for having outstanding female participation in two computer science courses. The only, we're number one in the state. But so, you know, if you just anecdotally, if you walked into a class, any of our challenging math and science classes, you would see a very good representation of females. And in some cases, more females than males. So this data doesn't surprise me. But again, we need to backtrack and measure against our other platforms.
What?
She listed like the Linkit and all those other tests. So just again, so the question is, what other platforms or what other data would we be measuring, not measuring against, but comparing, looking at? So it would be in grades 1 through 6, the NWEA math assessments, measures of academic progress in ELA and math, grades 1 through 6.
It would be what we would call the Linkit Benchmark A, which was given in the fall, Linkit Benchmark B, which was given in the winter. That would be for grades 7 to 12. Just a little side note, we also have some other common assessments that are given through Linkit. Again, we just look at that data. It allows us just to disaggregate it and look and see, are we seeing any racial, any flags that say that we should take a closer look at that gender? And then we'll talk again about the next subgroup. It would also be for students in our math pilot grades 4 to 6, what we call the iReady diagnostic. They took in the fall, they took again in the winter. Where appropriate, it would be an assessment called Inner Orbit, and that's an assessment of science learning. So those would be some of the, that's not meant to be the only list, but those would be the key ones to keep in mind. But anything that presented itself as a common assessment where all students took the same assessment, even if it could be a unit assessment for a grade level, we would be looking at that and just seeing, does everything appear the way we would like it to in terms of the data? If not, what are we going to do about that?
So are you going to have any conclusions on this thing, or just showing us the baselines?
This is just the baseline. Okay. We're waiting now, great question, but we just completed the winter assessments, and we are waiting from Linkit for the disaggregated. They'll compare math and the Linkits and iReady for us, and then they'll actually do this ourselves, which I can do. It's tremendously time consuming. We have iReady now that will do this for us. They prepare as part of our package these navigator reports for us.
Okay, and I think this is great data and good information, and I'm glad you guys are building a baseline, but I don't want to get into analysis paralysis. It sounds like, okay, we need to validate it. I mean, what do I can validate it? I mean, you can see right here on the data that you have in front of you that some of the male students are not doing as well in ELA as the others. So what actions are you taking right now to impact that? And can you assess this is what we really want the baseline to be. The ideal would be this, based on either standards or what we think the students should be, and have that as a baseline bar of what we want to ideally shoot for. And then here's what it is, and then validate with the outside data where we're off or where we're not off, so that we actually set our own baseline versus setting an arbitrary baseline based on the current number of students that are out there, and then trying to either optimize based around our current set of students versus baselining or optimizing to a set goal where we want to get to.
So, yes.
For our in-house assessments, MAP, Linkit, iReady, Inner Orbit, absolutely. This assessment, again, first time taking it, came in the fall. It was meant to measure learning from last year. So we had not established a baseline for that because we didn't even know what this assessment was going to show us.
Mm-hmm.
We now know what it shows us. And so we know in looking at other fall data and absolutely at the winter data where those bars are, with no doubt. And so that's what we're looking is to see where that progression is.
So can I just ask, when is the winter data going to be presented so we can have an understanding of the growth? That's what we really want to know is where we understand this is where we started at the beginning of the year, but we know we had a lot of growth, and that's what we'd like to know
about.
There
are three benchmarks throughout the year. So after benchmark C, sometime in May, we'll have a full report.
So you're not going to do the winter one? It's more the spring one you're going to do?
I can share the winter with CNI at the next meeting. We haven't aggregated all of it, but I certainly can share that if it's ready. But
okay.
to the question of what are we doing about it, what are we going to do about it? So I did present to CNI our learning centers. We had first identified 130 students through our Start Strong and Linkit platforms that were in need of help. We've corroborated that through a run of Power School grades, and those students were D's and F's. So we then made a concerted effort through our counseling staff and our teachers of reaching out to students to clear up any grades that were missing. And then that was whittled down to about 109. From that pool of students, we then counseled them and formed our learning centers. And that in turn was drilled down to 39, last count, 39 active students that are in a learning center at least once a day. So we used that data to the board's question was what can we do about it? It emanated first from the Start Strong. We corroborated that through the Linkit data. Then we ran a grade report, and from there did due diligence in mediating the concerns with at least 39 students. We don't limit that to just the 39 students. Anyone who needs help can drop in our learning centers, which run throughout the study halls in the day. And we have them staffed by math and ELA teachers. So, but the 39 are the students that we want to concentrate on and try to help them achieve what they can. So it came from this initial data.
If I may. So then remember that is addressing the students at the complex. Students, based on this data, so Mr. Hammer addressing the what are we doing, based on this data, students in grades 4 to 8, this data, along with other data from the previous year, was used to identify students who were in need of supplemental support, where this suggested that in addition to the classroom, they may need other support during the day in order to grow and achieve the way we want. And so we have teachers whose jobs it is during the day to provide that supplemental support. This data and other data from last year has been used to identify those students and then to monitor their growth as they're receiving those supports. That would also be true for the students falling in the green, meeting or exceeding. Do we have students who have come into us already knowing what we're going to teach this year? And those are our students who will benefit from enrichment and possibly GMT services. And so based on that data and other data from last year, we would be making programmatic decisions, it's really service decisions for those students based on their needs. How do we respond to their needs? Needs to support, strong support, some support, needs to continue to grow those students who have already demonstrated they're coming into us exceeding grade level expectations.
And were the parents made aware of those, whatever, 139 and then, or whatever it was?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Cool. I'm sorry, Joe, did you indicate the 139 that needs the learning hub, as it were?
Well, some of that was an easy fix because students were missing 2 to 3 assignments, and it's the Hawthorne effect. If you watch them, things change. So we counseled, we contacted parents, and they got their work in. So we extended the marking period for those students so that they could get their work in. So it really whittled down to 109, and from there, we had students that declined help. There were a number of those. We had students that attended 3 sessions and decided they didn't need it anymore. But the 39 has at least up and through last week has stood firm.
Just a follow on, because I thought it was fantastic curriculum instruction. Teed this off last year when you said basically it's a crisis. And the question I had, are we marketing to all students or just some? And the reason I'm mentioning that is because if we are, then wonderful. If we're not, a lot of that green, or at least some, might, you know, we don't know how much of that green is due to parents investing thousands and thousands of dollars in private tutors to make sure that their students are excelling. So what I'm getting at is, you indicated is an absolute crisis. I agree. I also think that we have parents that are spending an inordinate amount of money on tutoring. To what extent? So are we marketing to all of them? And then lastly, to what extent do we have a sense of how many of those students that are green and yellow would be yellow and or red had it not have been for their families investing significant dollars in tutoring? And do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's impossible really to track the private tutoring efforts. I do, you know, my company line is please don't use tutors. First of all, because our staff are strong teachers. They know the curriculum. They go by state standards. We can accommodate the needs of your child better than private tutors. Our learning center staff actually articulate with the general ed tutor, either in math or ELA, to discern what assignments are coming up, what they need strength in. So there's constant communication in that regard. And they're staff members, so they know the curriculum. So I would, you know, actively, I'm saying don't use private tutors. I think it's not a good use of your money. It's expensive. And I think the school district, it's incumbent upon the school district to answer the needs of the academic needs of the child. And I think we have enough forces to do that well. So we are, to your other question, Terrence, we are tracking students. We're tracking students that were in our last year's step-up program, and through the benchmark testing, see how they're doing relative to the general population. So we have a quite a bit of data floating around, and it's just trying to make sense of it. And that's something both Denise and I and the supervisors work on constantly. So yes, I would say please reach out to our resources, not to private resources. Parents that call me, I reiterate that because I think we do it better.
Thank you, Dr. Turner.
What, is every student required to take this?
No. So, and again, I'm going to give you a answer off the top of my head, and I'm going to say I'll just fact check that and certainly get back to the board because, and I'm only saying that because at this point in time, we are planning for so many other assessments. I want to be clear, I'm not mixing up what was, but students in grades 4 through 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 required to take ELA. I think also grade 11, we're currently prepping for the NJGPA, which will be given required for all 11th graders in March. So I may be confusing that, but 4 through 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I'm sure, I believe 11, but forgive me if I'm just confusing that with NJGPA, ELA, literacy. Math gets a little tricky. Grades 4 through 6, 7 and 8, who are in their grade level math classes required, but there was also Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2. So depending on the level of a course a student was in who's accelerated, that would depend on whether or not they were taking a math assessment. Science, that's the one. So I believe it was 6, 8, and 12, and I know, okay, so I'm just looking to the building principals to confirm. So science would be grades 6, 8, and 12 were required in the fall to take the assessment. Again, we have some upcoming assessments that we're wrapping our heads around who's required to take what. Okay.
There are a few more slides that we need to get through. So.
Okay, so then we looked at subgroup by gender. So this is science subgroup by gender. And again, just so you're looking at the representations on the graph, 51% females, 49 males of the students who took it. So then when you go into the graph, it's just representing again, the percent of those students who took it based on those genders, how their performance compared. Okay, and Matt can go on to the next one. So now the next disaggregation, and again, I'm don't want to beat it to death, but I just want to make sure you understand what you're looking at, and especially for anybody not present. This next group is by program. So by program, we mean students eligible for free and reduced lunch, students with 504 services, students who receive ELL support, students with IEPs who receive special services support, and something else I'm forgetting, which we'll see in a minute. So if you go down the bottom, oh no, I didn't forget. That would be Gen Ed. That's who I forgot. So you see the percentages of students when we disaggregate by their programs. 1% of our students who took Start Strong eligible for free and reduced lunch. 8%, 504s, is that an 8? I think I need better glasses. 6% students with 504s, 1% EL, receiving EL service support, 13% receiving support through IEPs, special services, and then 88%, thank you, in our Gen Ed population. And that's just to frame the graph that you're going to see. You could just, thank you. Okay, so again, this is just showing you in graph form, disaggregation by, it's in the chart, but this is in graph form, disaggregation by those special service, special program designations.
Are students with 504 and special ed, when they took this, were they given their accommodations and modifications?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Yep. As would be true with EL students. Okay, so yes, students who have in their documents 504, special ed, IEP, or EL, who have documented accommodations, documented needs, and required accommodations, they would have received those, absolutely. Okay, so Matt, thank you. Okay, so again, it's just the same. This is the subgroup by program looking at mathematics. The chart is just to frame that down the bottom, the percents of students that will be represented in the graphs. It gives you all the numbers there. You can look at that in the link, but then it's presented in the visual. This is math disaggregation by students in those categories. Okay. And Matt, the next one then would be, and again, the same would be for science. We scroll down. Now remember the changes in the percents. That's why I mentioned it earlier, because we have fewer students taking a grade 6, 8, 12. So the number of students taking it has, you see, significantly changed. So if we go to the graph, again, this would be performance by the subgroup of students who receive special services, programs, participate in programs, or we say supports or services. This would be the science disaggregated data for those students. And that has reached the end of the disaggregated data for Start Strong that we're presenting this evening.
Denise, quick question for you. I guess one, hopefully a lot, you know, from math to literacy to science, these results, obviously, they were shared with all the different teachers in those markets, obviously. And they'd be curious how much they agree or disagree or think these numbers are on point or not. And then the second thing is maybe Jeff, during the CNI for next month, or, and if you know the answer to this, Denise, do you know how many days of the year do we from K through 12 spend testing? Because obviously you're saying Linkit, NWEA, Start Strong, you know, Orbit, out of orbit, left of orbit, whatever that one is. I mean, there's an awful lot of tests. And obviously, you know, teaching to the test and all those things. I'd be curious what that, there's got to be a hard number because obviously there's a real value there.
So in fairness, the Linkit tests replace our unit tests to a large extent. So they were to get an Algebra 2 test in, binomial factoring, this would replace that test. They're all standard questions with construct validity. We have a library of questions that were provided through Linkit that have been tested nationwide. So they have good
good reliability and good construct validity. So in fairness, the linked tests do replace our normal subject area tests, as well as some of the inner orbit tests, but the MAP test does occur 3 times a year. That's a skill-based test. So yeah, those would be 3 days out of the year that are devoted to that. And what else?
So again, Mr. Reddy, I just want to just clarify. We listed all of those. Again, we want to just remind the board and the public that this Start Strong is one set of data, and that, again, we'd be looking at multiple, but NWEA MAP grades 1 through 6, right? Then we have to say, now the next group, Linkit, 7 to 12. So we don't have 7 and 12th graders taking MAP and Linkit. So yes, when you hear the string, we have our students in the MAP pilot, grades 4 to 6, iReady. They are not taking NWEA MAP math. They would take the iReady in place of that. Does that, so that just helps you to understand. When you hear the chain, it sounds like, remember, that's not all the same populations. So there's some trade-off there. And that's why then I clarify science for inner orbit. That's where that's appropriate. And that would really get to kind of be nitpicking the grade level in the class. So we just say that we do have an assessment for science progress, and that is called inner orbit.
Right. That's why I'm just saying, have it on a page where you could see it. Grade one, they take 22 days or whatever that number is, and it's not a bad number or a good number. It's not a knock at all. It just, so you could figure, okay, I got 183 learning days a year. How many days are being knocked off, and what percentages of that of the years from first grade? And is there little peaks and valleys? Fourth grade takes a ton. Seventh grade takes a ton. Whatever those grades are, I'm sure you guys know that. But I think it'd just be good, I guess, situational awareness of where we are, and then where does that number go next year? Does it go down because now we're 1 year full in school? We don't have as much learning loss, you would think. We're starting to catch up, hopefully. And then, you know, I'm not sure any less tests or more tests. It would just be, because I'd have no idea. I'd be curious what that number is. I mean, you guys have taken, Haroon and Trinity, you guys have taken a lot of tests over the years. Like, do you feel like you're, every 2 months you're taking some standardized test? I mean, that's, you know, I wonder, you know, how the kids feel. Like, okay, oh, we're taking another one of these tests. And then do they really give it their best effort? This and they're okay, A, B, for just go through and submit, done. You know, because it means nothing to them.
Right.
And therefore, it's affecting these grades, and we're using this data as real, true data, and maybe it's not good data. You know.
If I may, Mr. Yeah. Reddy, then. So to that point, we have been working with staff, supervisors, administration, building administrators to frame that for students so that they understand what we know is the value we hear from teachers. I speak to MAP. From that, what information that gives them in terms of how to proceed with instruction. Where do the students need additional support? If they're struggling with something, what might be that gap piece, or we call it that catch-up piece that has to be, or how they might be able to introduce something to students who are ready to learn something at a little higher level. So yes, I hear what you're saying, and certainly the feedback from our students, but I would also say that we can do that analysis certainly of the testing days, but I think it would be important for the board and the public to understand what information are we getting from those. I think looking at what assessments we're giving, what information we're getting from it, is it providing what we need to do the best job we can for student growth? That's always when we're looking at assessments, the decision. If we come to an assessment that we feel is not giving us the information we need, then certainly the decision would be discontinue. Remember, Start Strong, we're hoping, was just a one time, but we haven't heard yet, right? That was just given this year because the state had waived the requirements for 2 years for the end of year. So they made the decision to put in place a beginning of the year to get some information ahead of time.
Okay, thanks, Denise. We really appreciate your input. I think our next presentation.
I had one.
You have another question? Okay.
So what conclusions have you drawn from this? And next time you give one of these presentations, I think it'd be great if the board had this prior to coming into it so we could ask some more intelligent questions.
Okay, So yeah, I can speak on that. So again, from the hat that I wear in terms of supplemental programs, the information we've gleaned from this was to take a look at what this was telling us, students that need strong support. Was there other evidence from previous years or information from the classroom at the beginning of the year that would substantiate that we had, that those students needed support and therefore would benefit from supplemental before school, at the high school, some of these other learning. So the first immediate thing would be decisions about students from this and other pieces of data who needed support in addition to what they were getting in the classroom. The next piece would be a curricular decision, and Dr. Charney can speak a bit more on that than I can, but what I can tell you is as the supervisory team with building administrators, and I point to Art because I still remember Art as a colleague in that, on that level, is that with the building administrators to say in terms of instruction, what guidance are we providing our teachers on what to do? You need to address some things they don't know in order to move forward. If we spend too much time on what they don't know, then we might be holding them back. So it's an instructional decision about what is the right amount of catching up from what might not be there and moving forward. That pace, that depth, that is an instructional decision, because we cannot say all of this, let's say from third grade, and we need to move forward in fourth grade. It's not possible. So you have to say, with what I'm teaching right now, what is the most essential thing to address to help everybody be ready for the learning now? It's kind of like I'm trying to not.
So you've broken this down on the individual students and grade levels versus looking at it at a broad level, like what you're saying in here.
So that when you ask what we do, this data is just required presentation for checking to see if we have any disparities in data based on race, gender, or program status.
So do we have any of that?
Currently, we know that there's some indications when we looked at the, and again, off the top of my head, but in ELA, and I know that Mr. Howard and Mr. Lachman can talk about this, we've seen some discrepancy in ELA that seems to occur between our males and our females as they go from the elementary into those upper grades. And so the question is that developmental? Is, but those are things that we are looking at, we are talking about, the teachers are aware to see why that might be the case, why we might see that kind of decline as those students go from the elementary into those middle grades. Okay. Any of the others off the top of my head, I'm just going to respectfully say that I don't have those off the top of my head, but certainly we can get
there. Yeah, so, I mean, this is great to get all this data. What I'd love to hear is the conclusions and what you're doing about it, because I think that's what the community really wants. I mean, it's good to understand all this stuff, but what is the action you take? And you've explained that you've done a ton of it. I'm not saying you haven't, but it would be great to see here's the high level conclusions that we have from the analysis that we have.
Right. That's so I think, and you know, I defer to Dr. Charney again, but what I would say, Mr. Hammer, is that what we would want to do is look at this. This gave us a heads up. We'd want to look now at the winter and see what does the trajectory look like in terms of the growth, and what are those opportunities as we're moving toward the spring to address any now, right? This raised the flags in the fall. We want to see what this winter data is great. Going to tell us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Denise. Are we ready to move on to our next presentation? Dr. Charney is
ready as ever.
Is going to give a presentation from the Cultural Initiative Committee. Go for it, Dr. Charney.
Thank you. So I will preface it first saying that the members of the committee are listed there. I've worked with the committee over the last roughly 2 years in really wrestling with this issue of diversity and inclusiveness. So next slide, please. I'll give you a little bit of context. What I hope to present in this evening really is the state mandates in this topic, diversity, how the district meets these mandates and and some future curricular considerations we want to put forth. When I did arrive in this district, one of my first missions was to meet with a group of alumni. There was a petition that was presented to the former superintendent, signed by over 800 alum, that frankly stated that they had attended, and I'm just cherry picking some of their words, a bubble, cultural bubble that did not prepare them for navigating the world in terms of tolerance and diversity. They called upon the school district to look at three questions, three goals, one being to devise a comprehensive K-12 curriculum that included much more diversity and inclusivity and discussion of tolerance. The second goal was to train staff in diversity and tolerance. And the third goal was to share the findings of the district with neighboring communities. So I hope to present information to the board and the public that states that we have answered those goals. So the problem was, how can Homedale better address diversity and inclusion concerns? The next slide, please. So the first issue was state mandates. So we are obligated to cover state mandates with regard to these issues. There is, under the state mandates, I've generalized this, there's an Amistad commission that we have to present, and that's really the teaching of African Americans as an integral part of our history, starting with 1619. We have to establish a Holocaust education, genocide education curriculum, and we have to require our instruction to portray equal treatment of the contributions of the LGBTQ community and those people that have disabilities. Also, in addition, we need to share with our students perspectives of the role of women, Native Americans, the Latinx and Asian cultures in our country's history. So those are the state mandates that we're charged with implementing. So how do we do this? Well, it starts with the elementary. These are broad topics that we cover: civics, government, human rights, history, culture, perspectives. Throughout our elementary, we have many units devoted to Native Americans and culture. In our ELA, we read texts that have folklore and surface the role of these populations, both in a fictional and a historical sense. I've witnessed this in classrooms, the read alouds, your concern. For example, our pilgrims, our Indian community, Native American community, their roles. It's both fictionalized as well as non-fictionalized. All those groups, Native Americans, African Americans, European Americans, Latin Americans, are featured in every aspect of our curriculum. We have whole units in elementary that deal with stereotyping and prejudice, developing more whole inclusivity perspectives of people, recognizing the many cultures that make up our country,
and the contributions of those cultures. In fourth grade, there is a whole unit devoted to New Jersey state history. And that's actually a very detailed unit. Even our G&T goes out in the Homedale community and explores the historic importance of parks, structure, homes, institutions, and that's a large part of their project-based learning. So currently, our elementary literacy and social studies program uses two programs called Benchmark Advance and Study Sync, and the themes in those in that curricula concern citizenship, perspective, particularly from different cultures, technology and society, and history and culture. In our secondary literacy and social studies program, we deal with diversity and equity questions. We formed a new required course, Standing Up to Intolerance. That's required for all middle school students. And we also have an elective course, The Critical Lens, which I'll talk more about later. Our library collections have included texts that reflect these values in both assigned required texts as well as voluntary checkouts that students can do. The topic list of our secondary curricula in seventh grade, we have added these number of concentrations. I've listed one, Wanted a Just Right Environment, Roots of Democracy, Information on Slavery, and the Jim Crow, the entire Jim Crow treatment in our country. So those have been edified in the last 2 years. We continue to grow in that area. In our eighth grade social studies, we concentrate on the medieval world. We look at both Western and Eastern culture, and we look at both examples of colonialism in both cultures, in both hemispheres. Our eighth grade social studies participate in New Jersey History Day. This is a partnership with William Patterson, and we've actually finished as finalists, I'm told, in the past several years. So our students are enthusiastic, ebullient. They seize this topic and they research it very thoroughly. Our seventh and eighth grade language courses consists of both novels and nonfiction, book clubs, independent reading, that are all focused on these topics. In our seventh grade, we're a little bit ahead of the curve. I should say eighth grade as well, because we've integrated climate change. That's part of the 2020 standards and the effect of this on equity. So as an example, students would look at urban communities where areas of intense pollution exist and the association of minority groups in those areas. So that would be a theme of social justice that students would study and are a part of our units. So I have this sentence in here italicized. We do not address critical race theory. That is not a part of our curriculum. Critical race theory is a graduate college approach that starts off with the hypothesis that there is systemic and structural racism in American culture. We do not assume that. We do not teach it. Our approach to students is to give them a factual rendition of history, and they can form their own opinions. But this is not an advocacy of our teachers or our curriculum. So I wanted to establish that right off the bat. We do not teach critical race theory. Recent additions, our texts, really our book clubs are growing in large concentration, and they deal instrumentally with the notion of diversity and social justice, inclusivity. Our periodicals are very contemporary treatments of events that have occurred and that are still occurring in the arena of social justice. The two programs that we use are Mozilla. I've used that in other districts. It's very comprehensive, as well as ListenWise, which is really a podcast treatment of contemporary events. What do we need to do in the future? Well, we would like to establish a few faculty book study that would in one form have an in-service day where staff could discuss issues of diversity, equity, and racial sensitivity in schools. These would most likely be driven by a book study. We would look at our PLC work for teachers in these areas of tolerance. We would develop local partnerships with diverse districts for student engagement. We would conduct assemblies for students in all grade levels. We just had one at the high school, Mickey Fallon, who does present, I've seen him elsewhere, issues on equity and tolerance. We would form groups that would raise awareness on HIB issues and how to form empathy. I think that's the key word, really looking at empathy for other groups that may not have as much as we do. Partnerships with state and national organizations, and continue to build our elective courses at SATS and high school. Next steps, these are already occurring. We have a LEAD program with in Indian Hill, partnership with Homedale Police, and they talk about, police come in, talk about community awareness of differences, how to be kind, again, how to empathize. So that's been very successful. And we have a relationship at Brookdale called Change. This is actually coursework in tolerance, which our staff and some students have been involved in. We'll continue to update curriculum. We have a big rewrite this summer of 2020 standards, particularly in health. We try to incorporate all the relevant PD for our humanities staff. And then I just present to you in the appendix some examples of recent additions and textbooks and how we're concentrating. So I did begin the presentation by talking or discussing the goals that were brought forward by this alum group. In my estimate, we have met those goals. We have, again, looked at training our staff in issues of diversity and tolerance. We have added two new courses. The first goal, which was to expand the curriculum to recognize these areas of need, to really develop a sense of empathy in our students toward different cultures and people that are not, that do not have privilege. And the third part, sharing with neighboring communities, I, as well as two supervisors, attend our MC3 consortium, where we share these ideas. We have had several workshops in tolerance, and we've had a very meaningful exchange of views and how we can further promote these ideas of inclusivity and equality. So that's my presentation. Any questions?
Seeing none, thank you, Jeff. Are we sure? No questions? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For the expediency of time, we have decided to move our third presentation, which is about Board Member Code of Ethics, until our next meeting. So we're just going to launch ahead into the, we're just going to launch ahead into the next parts of the public meeting, which is a report of the student representatives to the board.
Good evening, everyone. Today is Holmdel's 165th birthday. To celebrate this occasion, the Holmdel High School's band, cheer, dance team performed at Village and Indian Hill schools. At Holmdel High School, students were asked to submit their favorite memories of Holmdel. Submissions were then posted on the bulletin board in the 400 hallway. Today, the SAB also hosted a Holmdel trivia, and the winner was awarded a $25 gift card to Aqua Rose. Last month, an email was sent out for seniors to order their cap and gowns for graduation. Seniors should place their order as soon as possible. Additionally, seniors should order their cords for graduation for the honor societies. Last Friday, Holmdel High School students attended an assembly featuring Dr. Mikey Fallon. Dr. Fallon presented stories about different people and discussed race, discrimination, violence prevention, and personal identity. It was nice to see students engaging with Dr. Fallon and learning from his presentation. I'll now hand it over to Trinity to complete the student report.
All juniors should submit their prom contracts to Chef Harkness in HHS room 303B as soon as possible. Tickets are now full price and all documents can be found in your emails or on the class of 2023 Instagram. The junior class is also selling Holmdel crewnecks. The link is in the daily announcements and proceeds will support all four classes. Additionally, the National Honor Society recently announced its May 13th Relay for Life event. All NHS members are required to participate, but all community members are encouraged to enjoy the festivities in support of cancer research. If you are interested in attending, please sign up via the link in the HHS daily announcements. Parent donations, whether monetary or through volunteering time, are also welcome. Thank you, and that concludes the student report.
Thank you so much, Trinity. Okay, report of the acting superintendent, Mr. Howard.
Good evening, everyone. It's a quick report. First, from Village, we'd like to congratulate Village School for raising over $33,000. Actually, it's $33,918 to be exact, for the Kids Heart Challenge. I think that's the most that this building has ever raised for this event. And special thanks goes to Ms. Savanchik because she actually coordinated the whole event by herself this year. Village School also will be celebrating Read Across America this week from the 28th to the 4th. We have some of the Holmdel High School peer leaders come into Village to read to the younger students in the classroom. Indian Hill, this past month, Indian Hill sponsored a Super Bowl food drive in support of Bridges at the Shore. On February 2nd, Indian Hill also participated in the World Read Aloud Day, which included guest readers and raffles. At SATS, Dr. Riso shared that 10 SATS musicians auditions for CJMEA, at Central Jersey Music Education Association regions, and all 10 made it. And this is a huge accomplishment because 400 students auditioned from all over the central New Jersey area. So congratulations to those 10 students. At the high school, National Kindness Week, Holmdel High School's ESL class honored their very own Holmdel heroes on the bulletin board between rooms 406 and 408. And also this month, the HTEA, in association with the New York Blood Center, sponsored their annual blood drive. Special thanks to Mr. Dowd, who always coordinates these events. And because I know Mr. Reddy likes numbers, Village 797, Indian Hill 671, SATS 528, and Homedale High School has 953. The last thing is one of our student reps already mentioned it. Homedale's 165th birthday was today. I just want to say thank you to first Mrs. Brew, who actually presented us with the idea, and Mr. Logren, who graciously accepted the role of chairperson of this event. I'd just like to thank all the teachers who actually came out and joined the committee, and within a short amount of time, put together what I think was a fantastic show and event for the kids. I spent most of my time over at Village looking at the little kids jumping around with the high school pep band, with the high school band, the chorus, and the cheerleaders there at Egmont. It was a really, really nice event. And also Dr. Riso, what she did was she did a little compilation of what was going on all across the district, and she put it together in a little video.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Yeah, so again, special thanks to Dr. Riso for putting that together. And as you can see, it was a really, really fun day for the kids. The high school did a good job. They earned their money today by bouncing around from school to school. So it was a very nice event. And I can't wait to see what happens from now going forward, you know, with now that this has been established. It was really nice to see the little kids bleeding blue all across the district. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Howard. Did you want to say something, Kevin?
I just wanted to thank one of Homedale's finest high school graduates, Debbie Brew. You're awesome. Thank you so much for everything that you do and all the team that you put together and working with the administrative team. Really, it's nice. It meant a lot. Really means a lot to everybody in Homedale. Thank you, Board President.
Sure. I just want to thank Debbie and Ms. Russo and everyone who contributed because it was a very adorable and video. And I was almost a little, I must be getting old because I was a little weepy looking at it because it was so, so charming. Really a treasure for everybody. So thank you so much. Our next is the harassment, intimidation and bullying reports. Mr. Howard?
I had a couple.
Sorry.
I didn't know if it was new business, not really new business, but since we're talking about the kids and different sports, I don't know if anyone heard the story, but a couple weeks ago, so the boys varsity basketball team had a, you know, real solid year. And, you know, talking when you talk about the kindness week, the boys team was voted Jersey Shore team of the week a couple weeks ago. It was not necessarily because they won 100 games. I mean, they had a really young team this year. But they were basically they were playing against Rumson in Rumson, you know, and Rumson was doing a senior night. And obviously when Rumson came here, we gave it our best effort, but they're a really good team, big, big senior team. Anyway, shout out to the Homedale boys for Rumson had a special needs boy who was a senior. And here's Homedale, you know, back up against the wall. They let the boy have his moment, gets the first basket of the game. And then the Jersey Shore Sports Network voted Rumson a team of the week, but then they also voted Homedale as well for letting the boys do that. And even cooler, one of the boys that I've known since he's been really little came with one of his other teammates and presented to the Homedale boys basketball team half of the Jersey Mike's gift certificates they got to our boys, which was really, really, you know, credit to these boys. You know, they didn't have to do that. You know, Coach Devaney and his guys teaching the kids the right thing. So, you know, when you talk about kindness, I mean, that's resonates with me. And there's a really cool video on it of how they did it. They show the boy, you know, it's a senior night, he's introduced, you know, the whole Rumson team's going crazy, they win the tap, a kid named Drew Pollock gets the ball stolen from him, so obviously a negative stat for him, but then the kid takes it in for a layup and the game stops, the whole team runs shouting out and high fives to everyone. It really makes you think it's more than a sport. It's the moment for that kid for 4 years never playing a game was just, you know, it gives you goosebumps thinking about it. And you know, kudos to our boys for doing the right thing again, because they did this a few years ago for another special needs kid, and it's really nice you know, I guess comment on what our parents are doing for the kids in this town. So
that's shout okay. out for them. Thank you. Okay, we're going to move back to the agenda with the harassment, intimidation, and bullying report. Mr. Howard.
Okay, currently there were 0 at Village, 5 at Indian Hill, 4 unsubstantiated, 1 substantiated, 1 at SATS, unsubstantiated, and 2 at the high school, which were both unsubstantiated.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. Now we're going to move on to committee reports. Joe, why don't you start out with the, do you want to do labor?
Sure, I'll do labor first. I have 2 committee reports because Mr. Sockel is not here tonight. So the Homedale Labor and Negotiations and Personnel Committee met on February 16th at 5 p.m. The committee reviewed the personnel items for the February 23rd meeting agenda. We also reviewed several policy regulations, PR 8465, P5541, P3233, that have been modified by Strauss-Esme. Questions were asked by the bias crimes and bias related acts policy regulation should be modified to include the district's SRO as one of the individuals who should be notified when a crime occurs or is expected. The administration was asked to modify policy 4231 to reflect the changes recommended by policy 3233, so both policies can be presented before the board for approval. Mr. Green asked to clarify the scope of the second sentence in the policy to see if there is the prohibition of partisan politic activity on school grounds covers everyone or just school employees. The committee was updated on contract negotiations with the HTA and HTAA for the, in the upcoming calendar year. The next meeting from the committee is set to take place on March 23rd at 5 p.m. So that's personnel. Any questions on that? Okay. And then so that you go first. BGNS committee meeting met and on February 17th, we talked about the multi-purpose turf field project update. Due to potential environmental issues, the location of this project has been moved away from the backfields of the to the backfields of the complex running parallel with the parkway. It was running on the to the left of SAT school, if you're looking at SAT school from the Crawford's Corner, but there were some environmental issues, so we had to move it towards the back, which actually worked out quite well. Transportation update, the Verity Woods development, Mr. Green updated the committee on a letter from the township attorney, an inquiry from the attorney for the Verity Woods developers regarding an issue regarding a prior request that the board commit to placing a bus stop at the entrance of the development. Mr. Green will be following up on the matter with both attorneys. Food service update. Lauren Berry, the director of dining services from Chartwell's, updated and provided an update to the committee regarding food quality process, procedures, and parent communications. Suggestions were made by the committee to use social media platforms to communicate with parents, as that is the source of much of the communications in this area. An RFP, the district will be performing an RFP request for proposal for food services in the 22-23 school year. We also discussed donations. There were two monetary donations from the HFEE and Village School PSA for new science labs at Village School, and a non-monetary donation from the HYAA for a volleyball system at Homedale High School. The applicable resolutions will be included on the February agenda tonight. Other matters that were brought up, there's a concern about maintenance of the fields next to Village School, which will be looked into and discussed at the next committee meeting. The date and time of the next committee meeting is March 31st at 5 p.m. That's it.
Any questions? Any questions?
Just a brief one. Do we have an estimate, we may not now, of what the cost is for properly maintaining that Village School field? I know in public, without getting into details, from time to time, the town has talked about picking it up for a phenomenal cost, which I totally oppose. But I fully support if we're able to just maintain our field. So are we going to get some, an estimate back on what we can put in the capital, or perhaps Mr. Petruzzo, just for us to maintain that field properly and get that scheduled out for the kids? Because the Board of Ed already took a lead role in the multi-purpose program that's going to be going on soon at SATS. So this would follow on, I think, to that lead role in properly representing the kids in athletics.
Yeah, that's what we asked at the committee meeting. We're going to discuss it next. They didn't have it at hand at that. So it just happened at the end of the meeting. We'll file it for the next board BGNS meeting.
Joe, were they talking the lacrosse field of the Village schools on the side, not the baseball field, right?
No, but it's mainly the fields. If you're looking at Village to the left of it, right, there's like a big long strip where there's two lacrosse fields that are on that. I think that was the main concern, that those weren't being maintained or need to be maintained better. So,
if I may, just one quick other follow-up. Addie Lubkert's home, that's out front. Particularly it's Holmdel's 165th birthday, so it's timely. Her maiden name was Holmes. We're in Holmdel. I know that the property, this is the White House in front of the high school. We should really move forward in preserving and protecting that home. And some of the concepts discussed, you may have had some dialogue on it, include helping coordinate with Duncan Smith Theater. Duncan Smith, also a student at Holmdel. Perhaps, I think Mr. Sokol had discussed some type of program where perhaps it's an art area that could be there for wine tastings, or a garden, that kind of area, and some kind of contiguous path between there and the Duncan Smith Theater. I think that's a real opportunity that's has not been tended to yet, but I think it's a nice opportunity for the board to preserve it historically, not necessarily saying designation, but preserve it historically, because that really goes to some of the founding families of Holmdel Township, for those who may not be as familiar with it.
Yeah, and we're going to have some additional discussions at our next board meeting on those specific topics. Thanks. And I agree with you that while I don't think we necessarily want to designate it as a historical thing because of all the issues that go along with that, it would make, we do want to maintain the dignity and the historical nature of it as a board. So at least that's my perspective on it.
And that is mine too. So I'm glad we share that. Are we, any other questions? Okay, I'm going to ask Eileen to do budget, please.
Sure. Budget and finance met on September 17th at 6:30. We did cover some similar topics to buildings and grounds. We also covered the 2021 annual comprehensive financial report. And like off the top of my head, I can just say that the auditors were really appreciative of how much work that Michael and Jessica put into the process and really had nothing but amazing things to say about everything we are doing here at the school. So obviously I would love to thank Mike and Jessica for all the hard work they're doing. Mike Andriola and Robert Provost from PKF O'Connor's Davies provided the committee on an overview of the district's annual financial audit process and testing performed, resulting in a clean audit with absolutely no findings. Due to the delays in the New Jersey State Division of Pensions providing their pension information, the statutory deadline to file the annual comprehensive financial report has been extended to from December 5th to March 15th. We discussed the budget. The committee reviewed our goals and the procedures, and as a result of the governor's budget address, it will be it will not be given now to the 8th, March 8th, so we will have a little bit of delays on that. We discussed four types of federal funding that we receive from the district, so I will go over them briefly. One is the CARES, C-A-R-E-S. We get $174,580, of which approximately $40,000 is for non-public school funding. That particular fund is for summer programs and resources. CRRSA, we get about $600,000. That covers PPE supplies, out-of-district tuition, summer and extended day programs, instructional supplies, consulting services, and professional development. The third one is the ARP IDEA, which is about $180,000, which approximately $31,000 is designated to nonprofit school funding. That particular fund is for out-of-district tuition and also professional services and salaries. The last one is the ARP ESSER, which is about $1.5 million, which is currently still pending state approval. That one is also for PPE and supplies, summer and extended day programs, a behaviorist consultant, and targeted extended day programs, all of which this funding is pandemic COVID related. And for those purposes only. The other item we discussed is number 41 on tonight's agenda. It is the 192-193 additional funding. So that is agenda item number 41. And our next committee meeting is March 10th at 6:30.
So just to clarify, the funds for the pandemic funding, that was for the entire 2 years. Those are all the funds for the entire 2 years in which
yes,
have been under the pandemic. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Are those all use it or lose it funds, or is there data on those, Mike, in terms of like, or I know some are sort of annual recurring ones, but are the other ones like, yeah, if you don't use them by a certain amount, you lose them?
Yeah, you have up until 2024 essentially to utilize. There's different, the ESSER care funding is extended. Some of the others were utilized quickly, but they pretty much, it's a multiple year one because these are special federal fundings all as a result of the COVID and pandemic, so that it's allowed to have run multiple years.
Anything else? Okay, Linda, could you please report on community relations?
Sure. The community and the relation committee meeting happened on February 15, 5:13 p.m., conference room and remote. The members are attended are Dr. Collar, Peter Reddy, Joe Hammer, Terrence Wall was absent. The administrators present is Art Howard. We also invited a guest from our township committee, Kathy Weber. So some action items we discussed in the meetings. First, we talked with township committee, Ms. Weber, discussed how school district and the township work more collaborate on some items. First one, such as how we providing information for residents who don't have children in school moving forward, make them easier to access the information. Second is we discussed how could we work together, put some information from the school district and maybe present in township's newsletters, which go out twice per month. Or so we need to figure out how we work together on there. Also, we discussed some orders program, like doing some mentoring for Homedale school students. Like many years ago, there's like a grandparents program, orders can read to elementary school students. But we need to figure out more, you know, to how we do that legally. Also, we discussed for the land cross field in village school, for the maintenance issue, I think we already discussed in the safety and ground meeting. That's the same thing. Then after Ms. Weber left the meeting, we reviewed some old business. We reviewed the social, for the school district, the social media channel for improve the communication. We reviewed the job descriptions and the detailed communication plans. So we agreed, we are not going to do a full job, hire a full-time job for this position, probably just the hourly paid part-time. Also, we bring up the Homedale 165th birthday, this program, and we really appreciate the school and the parents, you know, work together and township work together, make it a wonderful and memorable event for Homedale. This Homedale birthday committee members, they are William Langa, Scott Cascon, Matt Kukata, Christina Raku, Alicia Kilai, Johnny Asriel, Debbie Boo, Randy Kerner, Jamie Kenny, Catherine Tomiak, Christian Rizzo, Mary Kaye, Snowgrass, Katie Tyler, Trina McCarthy, Greg Jastinski, Stephanie, Jenny, and Art Howard. We really appreciate everybody's effort to put this program together. Thank you very much.
I have to say, I think the idea of having the township newsletter have a blurb about the schools so that members of the town can understand what's going on in the district is really helpful, because like my mom, who's a senior citizen, lives in town, and she and all of her friends don't really have an idea of all the good things that are going on in the school, and I think they should understand where what we're doing and how their tax dollars are being spent. So I think that's a good idea. Thank you.
Thanks. So we will also discuss the next time for the committee time is March 29 at 5:30 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't realize you weren't done. Any other questions or comments? Eileen, you have your...
I just have a brief one on streaming meetings and you know, certain areas where I certainly would be critical of the Township Committee, but I got to say the Township Committee in Homedale is leading the way as far as the video of their meetings, their boards. They're on Zoom, they're on Facebook, and I think that's a significant, I'll call it an opportunity instead of a deficit here, but it's a significant opportunity to improve transparency, communications, getting in front of the folks who perhaps can't come here publicly. They may be disabled, they may just not want to come, but they do want to watch, or they may be on vacation, they may be in a different country. Holmdel Township hosts their meetings through YouTube, and the different folks, everyone on the board knows that they do that. I'm bringing it up. I bring it up every year. I brought it up for about 5 years before I even got on the board. I fail to understand why we're not streaming our meetings and hosting them on a server, a site, YouTube. This sounds like the social media platform is about to get going a little bit better. But is anybody interested in this, or is it just me? I just wanted 22. Do we want to do it?
I 1,000% agree.
Okay.
And as someone that has tried to replay, and it comes up on my computer about this big 3-hour meeting that I have to try to figure out.
Oh, the audio. You suffer. People suffer trying to see the audio. Yeah, it's so awful.
1,000%.
Well, I know. First of all, I think we'll send it to the Community Relations Committee to discuss that.
It was listed. I listed it, even though I had a business commitment.
Okay, but I just want to also, I've talked to Dr. Cascone about different ways when he comes on board about how we're going to communicate. And so I know this is something that literally I spoke with him about this week. And so it's in our minds.
All right.
It's on the agenda. As we are discussed and with the next month when our superintendent, Chris Kong, come in, we'll have a plan.
Great, thank you. We're absolutely looking for leadership on that issue. And along the lines with that, the website needs to be scrubbed to make sure the information is current. And frankly, my own opinion is the website's got to go. It should be completely reformatted with a company that the IT folks are comfortable with. So it's more user-friendly. It's also all the ADA compatibility and all the other different features and functions with the most modern coding. That's also, frankly, an old news issue, but I wanted to put it out there again and, see where it lands. New website. Thank you.
I don't want to speak for Mr. Gattini, but I think they're in the process of doing that with the website.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gattini. That's awesome.
I just got different options for what it looks like to
great. Thank you
for consideration.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I think we updated that website. Like Eileen, do you remember, Joe? It was like 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, it wasn't that long.
It was a while ago now. I mean, obviously, it's like a computer. Probably 3 years. It's ancient, right? Probably at that point. Yeah.
But I'm confused. Well, we can discuss in committee. Yes.
Okay. What's time for Pete and curriculum and instruction?
Oh yeah, buckle up. So I did the longest report. CNI committee met last Wednesday, February 16th, 7 p.m. I'll hit on a bunch of the highlights. First one, out of district travel. Well, this is under the superintendent recommendations for approval. Reviewed various professional development and conferences district staff will be attending. The good news about that, every month it seems to be more and more in person. This is good. Approval of student trips, review student trips from robotics team to the chess team to the Philadelphia Zoo again, which is nice to see. For the Indian Hill kids to the Portisea Park in Middletown for our third grade classes. Nice to see this list growing each month. Third item we discussed was the summer step up program. I think Dr. Charney mentioned this a little bit in his discussion before. We discussed it in length. It's a 6-week summer step up program. Includes everything from ESL for K-7, literacy for grades 1-3, 4-6, 7-10, math, 1-3, all the way through 9-12, everything from algebra 1 to AP primer for chemistry, STEM courses, etc. Also during that summer step up program, there's a performing arts summer camp for kids grades 5-12, being housed K-6 at Indian Hill and 7-12 at the high school, a couple of different sessions. So as the year progresses, I'm sure we'll get more and more information on that. A lot of the courses offered will depend on interest, the amount of people registering for them. The fourth thing we discussed was on the board agenda is changing the length of the engineering class at SATS. I'm sure Mr. Logren is aware of this one. So his recommendation to change the length of the engineering class from a semester, what it is now, to a quarter due to reducing enrollment. So the 3-year evaluation shows 712 kids have registered for game design versus 130 for engineering. not necessarily like they like game design better than engineering. I think what we discovered was the reason is because the kids in SATs have so few choices. So making this a semester or a quarter course will actually drive up the enrollment because it'll give them an opportunity to do different things. Fifth thing will be a reviewed gift and talented policy to stay in compliance with that. What else we have? Summer band camp. We discussed the band camp to be held in mid-August at the SATS High School complex. Like we were saying before, grades 5 through 12 for the band, being run by Dr. Riso, Ms. Nigro, Ms. McCarthy, Dr. DeVivo, and Ms. O'Hara. Costs will be to be determined. We discussed the calendar, which I presume we'll probably be discussing that in new business or old business later. Number 10, it was discussed discarding old books. It was about 300 plus books are in terrible shape, not used anymore. So unfortunately, they have to be discarded. Acceptance of an HYA letter of intent to purchase a volleyball system for Homedale High School. Then the last superintendent recommendation, we reviewed the Title I funding for various teachers in the district. Under special services, reviewed student placement, home hospital instruction, and then also approval of the extended school year. Reviewed this program, which I think the dates are, we're still working on the dates of that, but I know it's during the summer. And then under new business, lesson plans. There was no significant update on lesson plans. And as the board was reported to, supposed to happen in January, but lesson plans have not started as of yet. Summer step up program, there's the flyer, just as we discussed above. Learning centers, as Dr. Charney discussed before. This is a really positive thing. 100 plus high school students were identified as having an opportunity to get more attention and more, I guess, almost tutoring, you might call, with a lot of the high-end teachers we have in this district. Out of the 100 plus high school students that started the program, we still have 39 kids that are still attending daily. So really nice job at a high school reaching out to those kids and really trying to bring them up, which is nice to see. One of the final topics we discussed was about sexual education. There's a long discussion on the sex ed topic took place. Biggest item to report would be parents can request an exemption from any specific piece of the curriculum. Dr. Charney has started a frequently asked questions document to answer a number of questions that were posed on this topic. And we'll be sure the administration will ensure that the document is posted on the district website. School starting times were discussed. Fortunately, we didn't get as much time as we wanted to discuss on this, so that will go back on the agenda for next month. As everyone might recall, before the referendum, we had discussions of, does it make sense to possibly switch the starting times of, say, SATs in a high school versus Indian Hill and Village? And I think what the additional research to be done to see if this is something the district will seriously look into. And items for the order, we discussed the special education audit that we now have, and I think that'll be discussed in more detail next month as well. And there was a question about why the pre-K starts 1 week later than the regular starting school. So we're still looking into that. I think the agreement was, and Art, you could discuss this if you think they're probably going to be starting at the same time, or is that still under consideration? Is that?
Not at the same time. We moved the start date up, though, but the K through 3 starts at a different time. We need a few days to do orientation for the pre-K, okay, so it can't start at the same time.
Thank you. And then the last item was class sizes, and this was a topic of, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago. I remember as we thought the class sizes were starting to trickle up, you know, into the mid-20s, upper 20s, is to get a fresh look of where we are from K through 12, what the class sizes are, what the averages are. You know, I think the goal is the board we had a few years ago is to keep that average in the low 20s. So I think that'll definitely be a topic in the next couple of months that we identify exactly where we are now, where we want to go, and how we, if there are certain things we need to do to get there in terms of hiring new teachers or splitting up classes or things like that. Next meeting is tentatively scheduled for March 23rd at 5 p.m. And that's it. Questions?
Hey, Pete, on the whole sex education or the health education piece of this thing, will the FAQ document include the curriculums for the particular class
It says he can opt out of any specific piece of the curriculum. Will the FAQs have the list of all the curriculum for all the classes so that they can understand what's being taught, what's not being taught, or what they want their kids to exclude from?
That's an excellent question. I think Dr. Charney, if you want to take that one on. I know in the FAQ documents, Joe, it had it didn't list all the curriculum, but a lot of those questions came up, like, hey, what if my child doesn't want to take this, and the different parts of the curriculum, I guess, is, I don't know if we list every piece. Yeah.
We have a detail issue we have to address in the timing of the year of when it is. Most folks don't know what to opt out from and when. And we have to be much more transparent and detailed about that, in my opinion.
So a letter went out to the community, and it listed an abridged version of curriculum K through 6. The scope and sequence has not been detailed. So that's something we probably have to work on. There will be a letter going out to grades 7 to 12 parents that will have the same structure, scope and sequence, and a detailed, well, an abridged version of the curriculum. Any parent can go to our health curriculum at all schools and get a much more detailed perspective of what we teach. But we don't have a calendar of that. That may require some work.
So, Dr. Chang, when you say they can go to it, where do they go? On the website?
It's on the free school. Well, we have it in the curriculum instruction, and each school has, I believe, a physical health curriculum. That's where I extracted it from. So it should be in each school's curriculum.
I guess the issue is that we just need to make sure that there's enough detail in there that parents can make a choice based on what they want or not want their kid to see. And I hope, I haven't seen what you're talking about. I have to go back and look at it, but I would hope that we would be able to say, I want my kid to opt out of this particular section of that, if that's what you're teaching. But I just want to make sure the parents have enough information so they can make that decision clearly and easily, and then have a plan in place for the schools to be able to adopt it. So if I'm a parent and I say, I don't want my kid to learn about, you know, whatever, that we as a school can say, okay, this kid is opting out of this portion of it. It happens on this day. Therefore, these can go to study hall or whatever.
Yeah, I can't guarantee the day. Just like lesson plan would indicate over a 2-week period when we would cover those issues, but the district doesn't do lesson plans to a large extent, so we can't make that determination.
So I guess my question is if a parent says, I want my kid to opt out of this particular thing, it's in a 2-week block of it. It would have to be the whole block is what you're saying.
Yeah, and actually that level of detail is there and very transparent. It's in the unabridged version of the curriculum. What I did was synthesize that so that parents could get a quick bird's eye look of the major topics and the subtopics in each and the standards that we have to adhere to. So there's no reason a parent can't look at a unit and say, I want my child to opt out of this part of the unit, the entire unit. That capability is there, and we have a policy that covers that.
I think the challenge is having an operable opt-out, because you run the risk of parents just giving a general opt-out without getting into content. Some folks may think the content for little kids is enlightened. Other people find it to be absolutely radical. So if they don't know specifically when, the opt-out is somewhat meaningless, because they don't know when, what piece, unless they're doing a general opt-out. And I guess the question I would have is, for a parent who is trying to rifle through this information, they don't have timeframes, they don't know, their default might be, opt my child out of anything that I perceive to be absolutely radical to a fifth grader or an eighth grader from a sexual standpoint. How do we cure that? Because there may be classes tomorrow. They don't know when to, and me as a parent, I don't know when, I'm on the board. When, how, what day, what month? No idea. I have 10-year-old and two 12-year-olds. There's content that I absolutely am opposed to having shoved down their throats from the New Jersey State DOE. Maybe I don't know when to opt out.
Well, actually, I think Dr. Cherney answered the problem is our teachers are not having lesson plans, so we don't know exactly which day something is being taught in the classes. And this is exactly one of the reasons why we would need lesson plans, so we know what is being taught. So this is, okay. It's like a many-tiered problem.
Like maybe could we somehow to the information for the parents just before beginning of the school year or before the classes, the teaching of that certain content to say, okay, in the next 3 months, we're going to teach this content, right? List of items. If you want to upload certain items, you give them a link where they can choose and select opt out. This way, you know, save teacher's time, save parents' time. Also, you may give them contact information. If you do not know and not sure whether you should opt out or not, or you do not understand what the content, and let them give them clear instructions who to contact, what is the phone number and what the email address, and they can easily do the reply on the same email. Do not have to go over to our website to find out who's responsible, who was their email, what's their even name, right? So give them clear instruction what they needed to do and to make that happen to save their time and save teachers' time too.
So the K-12 health curriculum will be revised this summer. We've allowed monies to revise and incorporate the 2020 standards. So I can actually direct that the units have months that they will be taught in. And my vision is to embed a Google form within the document that parents can use to send a request to opt out of that particular unit or that particular subject in the unit. Those are my ideas. I can't really guarantee how it's going to pan out because we'll have multiple teachers working on these documents. I certainly can have direction with the principals as well as our supervisor of athletics and health education. Work on that plan. If you have other ideas, please share them with CNI and I can float those as well. But it's a bit of a conundrum. It's across the state that this is an issue and other districts they're being challenged to deal with this. But the opt-out I will leave you with this. It has to be specific. It can't just say, I don't want this unit taught to my child. It has to request a specific topic in the unit that you do not want your child to learn about in that classroom setting. And of course, we'll devise an alternative assessment that works toward that.
Just so I understand, so it's on the mom or dad to let the school know they don't want sexual acts taught to their eighth grade daughter. Is that the level of detail that's required here?
That's correct, yeah. That would be a specificity that could be acknowledged. And okay. and an alternative assignment could be made to work.
And this is also like self-exploring for fifth graders as another key example.
That is the unit. You're right.
Okay.
It's under self-exploration. But I'll share with you that at least the feedback I'm getting, those topics are not deeply engaged in a classroom. It's been reported to me that most teachers acknowledge it, to your words, as body exploration, and the actual level of detail is not surface.
Well, the parents obviously interested if the word masturbation is in it, and for the eighth grader, they're interested in if the terms anal sex are included in it, and they're very concerned about that. And these are the key items that you're hearing about. If it's in the classroom, I don't think it's inappropriate for a board meeting.
So is this September forward, or is there anything that a parent should be mindful of between today and
Policy covers it. They can request this at any time.
But I'm just sorry, the new curriculum, is that September onward, or is there any curriculum? Okay, thank you. I'm getting my answer. It's not between now and the close of this particular year, between now and June.
There are areas of the curriculum presently from 2019 that would be controversial, yes. But the new curriculum has not been embedded as yet.
All right. And just to finish, perhaps there might be a green, yellow, red from what typically you may find in the buckets of issues that are that the parents are very interested in health activities and education, and the areas that might be more for the reasonably prudent person standard that may fall into the yellow or more in the red, so we can simplify it in some way. And I know this is highly subjective, but some type of guide, unless it's just calling the principal and speaking directly to the principal and getting into the details there, which may be the case. But if there's any mechanism to simplify this for parents who are interested in help in just understanding what it is and make choices on behalf of their family in a rational, thoughtful way, without having to become experts in our website and our curriculum. I just think that would be very helpful moving forward, particularly if there's anything between now and June as opposed to September. That's all I have.
Jeff, I know I haven't really looked at if you go to any of the schools on the curriculum instruction right now. I just went into grade 2 under health. There's a 31-page document that lists all 6 units and how many weeks of exactly what's being taught for integrated skills, what the expectation is, what the outcome is, what the desired outcome they're looking for. Literally in 2 minutes, I found out I could look at the 6 units and then drill down to each of the units of human relationship and sexuality. All students will acquire X, and then going through piece by piece by piece. It's super detailed. Probably the only thing it just needs to do is needs to get a refresher of going through there. And then if parents are really that, hey, I want my kid opt out of here, you could specifically go exactly where you want. Unit 1, subparagraph 2, subsection 3, right there. So, I mean, it is here. It took me 2 minutes to find it. I'm no computer whiz.
Is that on our website?
That's on our website. I went right into Village School. I picked grade 2 health. Mary Beth Carey did it, and that's obviously a few years ago. That's dating ourselves because I don't think she's been here a few years back, right? And that's okay. But it's very detailed. It just needs a refresher, I would think. And this is probably a very good time as any to, spend that time and that money and whatever it takes to do it, because this is definitely a hot topic that's only going to get hotter, right?
I just want to point out that Peter's has a good point. All of our curriculum guides have always been online and accessible, and you can always see every single, any subject, history, science, health, if you're interested in knowing what your child is studying. So it's all there and has always been there. So thanks for pointing that out, Pete. Are we done with this?
I had one question for Pete, sorry. With the lesson plan, you said that there's no update, right? That's an important point. So when do you think we might get an update?
We're hopeful for next month we'll have a better update. I know most of the committee, at least, I'm sure the board, it's definitely something we want to do because it's important. I mean, how can you get better if you don't know what's getting taught? It may be something that hasn't been done in the past, but in my job, I have to say what I'm doing this week, what I did last week, and how am I going to get better if I don't know what I'm doing? If I don't know what direction I'm going, like how can my manager help me to be better if they don't know what I'm doing? So I think it's definitely a topic, and it'll take some time, like Jeff said.
I just wanted to say, Dr. Charney, and to the rest of maybe it's the business office for handling the money, but a lot of districts are not doing a summer step-up program this year, whatever they may call it, and Holmdel's doing it again this summer, and so it's great because a lot of districts only did it last summer with the funds, and we're able to squeak out another summer of it, so kudos.
I think that the district is very focused on learning disruption, which is what we're calling it now. And I think this is a very important goal for us to make sure all these children are on the right track, hopefully by next year, right, Dr. Turney? You seem to think there's a lot of progress with student growth.
Our our other data does show much better results than the Start Strong, and we're getting good trajectories in ELA and math. There are areas of concern that we, but we'll have the ammunition to diagnose those areas and do something about it. So we already have the do something about it implementation in place, and the step up is one such. We also have period zero, and we also have identified students in each cycle of the year that need help. So we're mobilizing the staff to address it. So I feel the district's in a very good position to use your term, remediate. Many districts are just trying to figure it out. They don't have data platforms in place. We have the platforms, and we're using those platforms. So I think, you know, I feel pretty good about where the district is.
I agree. Thank you so much. Okay. Anything else on the notes before we move on to action questions or comments from the public on action items only? Anyone? Okay. I'd like to have a motion on action items 1 through 3. We are pulling number 4 until we do our ethics training because we've changed that to next month. Numbers 5 through 12 and numbers 17 to 45. Can I have a motion?
Move.
Second.
Can I have a discussion?
Thank you, Madam President. Mr. Wall asked if I would address on item 38, the legal implications of appointing a board member's child to these particular part-time positions. There's a nepotism policy that's mandated by state regulation. That regulation specifically permits a district to adopt a policy which excludes from its coverage employment of students who are children of board members. The Holmdel Board of Education has adopted a policy which specifically includes that exclusion. So it is permissible as a matter of law for the Board of Education to approve the part-time employment of students who are children of board members. And of course, any individual board member in that position must recuse from voting on that particular item.
Anyone else? You have your mic on, Janine. Okay. Roll call.
Mrs. Urbanski.
Yes.
Mrs. Zhang.
Yes, except for item 38. Item 38, yes to Mary Bramante. Yes to Vincent Rula. Abstain for Lawrence Kai.
Mr. Reddy.
Yes.
Mrs. Bramante.
I'm a yes for all except 38. I am obviously abstaining from Mary, and I am a yes for the other students.
Mr. Wall.
Yes on all except a no on 12, discarding the library books, and on the, was it 38? On 38. Thank you.
Mr. Van.
Yes.
Yes.
Mrs. DeSillo.
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Kaur, will you read agenda item 13?
Thank you for giving me something to do. Acceptance of monetary donation from Holmdel Foundation for Educational Excellence. That the board accept with gratitude a monetary donation from HFEE not to exceed the amount of $142,828. This gift is to be used for the new science labs at Village School.
Can we have a motion?
Move.
Second.
A discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Urbanski?
Yes, and thank you for such an amazing and generous gift.
Mrs. Eng?
Yes, thank you for your donation.
Mr. Reddy?
Yes, thank you very much.
Mrs. Benamonte?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Roll?
Yes, thank you so much.
Mr. Hammer?
Yes, thank you very much.
Dr. Kaur?
Yes, thank you.
Mrs. Tasilla?
Yes, thank you. The plans look amazing.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Mr. Chiller, could you read item number 14?
Acceptance of monetary donation from Village School Parent Student Association, that the board accept with gratitude a monetary donation from the Village School PSA not to exceed the amount of $65,000. This gift is also to be used for the new science lab at Village School.
May I have a motion?
Move.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Urbanski?
Yes, and thank you so much for the generous gift.
Mrs. Eng?
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Reddy?
Yes, thank you.
Mrs. Benamonte?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Wall?
Yes, thanks.
Mr.
Yes, thank you very much.
Dr. Kaur?
Yes, thank you.
Mrs. Tasilla?
Yes, thank you.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Mr. Hammer, could you read item number 15, please?
Acceptance of monetary donation from Homedale High School Project Graduation. Resolved that the board accept with gratitude a monetary donation from the Homedale High School Project Graduation in the amount of $13,420.44 to be placed in the class of 2020 account for the future class reunion event.
Can I have a motion, please?
Move.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please. Thank you so much. Yes.
Mrs. Eng?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Reddy?
Yes.
Mrs. Benamonte?
Yes.
Mr. Wall?
Yes, thank you very much.
Mr. Hammer?
Yes, thanks.
Dr. Kaur?
Yes, thanks.
Mrs. Tasilla?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Mrs. Benamonte, could you read agenda item 16, please?
Absolutely. Acceptance of non-monetary donation from the Homedale Youth Activities Association to Homedale High School. Resolved that the board accept with gratitude a non-monetary donation from the Homedale Youth Activities Association, value not to exceed $3,500 for a volleyball system at the high school.
Motion.
Move.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Urbanski.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Mrs. Eng.
Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Reddy.
Yes.
Mrs. Benamonte.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Mr. Wall.
Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Hammer.
Yes. Thank you.
Dr. Kaur.
Yes. Thank you.
Mrs. Tasolo.
Yes. Thank you.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Okay. So we're moving on to old business. Does anyone have any old business?
I have one old business. Sure. So we mentioned the boys basketball team, but shout out should definitely go out to the girls basketball team too. I'm not sure if Principal Kokoda is still here, but if everyone hadn't heard, our fine principal was the coach of the girls team, who had a tremendous season and sort of a historic game last week where he coached against his wife, who's the Manasquan coach. And sadly, the girls lost. I believe he probably tried to keep good relations at home, and I understand that, you know, had somewhat of a lead, and it was a 3-point loss, but a really, really cool, cool event. So congrats for leading the girls and doing a nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and congratulations. Any other old business? How about new business?
I do have one, and we saw that for years people would come up to the microphone and ask us to do certain things, and most of the time we can't do certain things. And I know we've talked about it, but I think it would be a good time, or no better time than now, to put together some sort of document that very easy one-page document says, here's Board of Ed responsibilities, and post it right on each, whether it's each of the school websites or at least right on the district website, because how many times have people come up here and I don't want to say yell at us, but basically look at us saying, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And obviously we have pretty much three main responsibilities of hiring a superintendent: establishing the budget and making sure the schools are well run. And that's probably the biggest gray area, because how do you define that a lot of times? But I think that would be a nice document to put together.
Yeah, but if you include setting policy.
Yeah, exactly. Setting policy, exactly. But I just think that would be a good time, because so many times I know, talking to Ms. Brew many times, a lot of times people used to go to the parent site and, oh, why is the board doing this? Why are the board doing this? Why are they feeding the kids the way they're feeding them, and all these different things? And half the time, a lot of things are not even in our purview. But yet people are like, oh, the board, what is, you know, so it would just make it easier, because then you have a separation of church and state.
I actually think it's an excellent idea, and it's something that could probably be raised in community relations. Yeah. So I definitely, if they had a document, then people complaining on Facebook, we could just respond with the document. So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I think that's great. When we set up our social media channel, maybe on the home, like events, we put a notice there, right? That is for the member responsible for, and the others, you know, this is for school administrators' duties.
Right. Once we have it, we could basically post it to a lot of those sites on, and then every now and again repost it, just so newer people or people who sometimes forget and get a little excited and things like that, they can just gently remind them, going, hey, it's not our job to do such and such.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate that input. Okay. Any other?
I just wanted to just briefly thank Mr. Howard and Mr. Petrizzo for following up on the food service complaints. And I think it also ties to the Community Relations Committee and the work done to manage the Facebook presence more. And some of the folks may have complaints that are real or ultimately are proven to be not quite accurate as presented, particularly in what I would refer to as anti-social media. I don't think there's anything social about it, but I just want to thank you for following up on those items and on the food service and going out to the RFP. I think that will be good process, regardless of what the vendor is, to have the folks compete to provide excellent food to the students. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Now we're moving into questions or comments from the public. Please state your name and address, and if you have any group affiliation. Thank you.
Jamie Nello, 18 Ladwood Drive. Homedale BOE, we have a wonderful culinary arts program with Chef Harkness. We also have a wonderful special needs program, children with special needs. The STARS program in particular, Mr. Graham, he didn't know I was actually coming here tonight, but I can tell you Mr. Graham does an amazing job. He's one of my daughter Jordan's biggest fans. He's so involved. It's amazing. So thank you, Mr. Graham. But we have a problem. When you mix the culinary arts in the same room or the same room that shares the same ceiling with the STARS program, it can have some bad outcomes. And what does that mean? Often the kids are coming home or going out in the community smelling horribly. Why? Chef Harkness should be able to cook whatever he wants, and God bless him, he's a great cook. But if he's sauteing garlic or onions or making some wild ethnic foods that we all love, and it's sitting in this room with no ventilation, and it's being spread all day long on these children, they go out in the community not with a little smell, a stench, and it often resembles body odor. And I can tell you one thing, my daughter Jordan has never had body odor one day in her life. Maybe she's like some blessed angel or something. So what I'm asking you respectfully, and Mr. Petrizzo in particular, you have an amazing knack for building reserves and coming up with some nice expenditures with those reserves. We've spent a lot of money over the past few years on a lot of various things, infrastructure and recreation. We need to immediately get an engineering firm, spend some money, put ventilation systems in that culinary arts room. So like we have in our homes, most of us have in our homes, when we cook, it goes out. It doesn't go all over these kids' bodies. This was a big thing overlooked during the $30, $40 million that we spent recently. I hope we can get it done pretty quickly. If we can't get it done, then I think we need another room for these kids, because this should not be the case going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing that. We'll bring it to the Buildings and Grounds Committee.
Debbie Brew, 15 Cindy Lane. I have a couple of things, but I'll try to make them quick. First and foremost, I really want to thank Mr. Howard for really getting the ball rolling on the Homedale birthday thing, because less than a month ago, I came up here and suggested that we recognize Homedale for this day and perhaps put in some history of Homedale lessons going forward. Within 24 hours of that, he had assembled a team of 15 different staff members, administration, represented by all the schools, ready to meet. Mr. Ockren stepped up to be the chair. Mr. Kokoda was there. It was amazing to see something get on the ground so quickly because we didn't have a lot of time. So I just really want to thank, he's big on thanking everybody, but he got this done. He took the bull by the horns and he did it right away. And kudos to you. Thank you very much. I also, Elizabeth, was about to shed a tear on that. It was beautiful. So thank you everyone who supported it and participated in also. It was wonderful. And Dr. Riso for putting that together. And my point on that is sometimes you don't have to overthink and talk about things for a long time and just get things done. Like I know Mr. Reddy always says he likes to just get things done. But that brings me to the 10 years I've been bringing up to please do a chart like Pete suggested, because I feel like I've asked for that for a long time. And in my Homedale parents days, that would have saved me a lot of time. Check number one, check number six, here's the chart, go refer to it. It's not their problem. Unfortunately, it's the building principal's problem or somebody else's. So I hope that gets done. The last thing is I did not come up during action items because I assumed that the calendar was going to be pulled for discussion, because every year we discuss the calendar before it's approved and there was no attachment on the agenda looking at the calendar. So what does the calendar look like?
I have copies of the calendar, and you're correct. Normally it goes through at least the parent groups. The superintendent, I guess they call it a roundtable meeting with the parents, happened in January, and there wasn't another one scheduled. And I know that the calendar, and thanks to Mr. Logren for keeping me on point with the dates, for whatever reason, it wasn't put together when Dr. Seitz was sitting in the chair. So I had to work with the principals and the HTA to get it together.
Okay, so usually at Board of Ed is when everybody has their 2 cents to put in. So that's just, so we're starting after Labor Day, I assume. And I'm very interested in the last day of school because I'm chair of project graduation and we always have to put in our requests to reserve the place on a certain day.
Right. I did circulate through the board. So all the board members actually seen it. The last day, I could tell what the last day is, correct? Yeah. The last day is June 20th, which is okay. A Tuesday.
All right.
The first day would be September 6th.
Okay. And then the calendar will be shared now after the meeting, I guess, with everyone as a follow-up.
Okay.
I thought maybe people might ask about the calendar in New World Business, but I guess so many people put their 2 cents in ahead of time that there was a consensus, so no one discussed it in public.
Okay.
Thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Thank you, Mr.
I think we'll make sure we get the calendar done earlier next year so that we can have community input. But believe me, there is a lot of input on that calendar. So rest assured. Any other questions?
Yeah, I think that calendar hit like 3 or 4 different committees.
It hit everybody. You know,
so almost every board member obviously had, didn't have a public discussion about it.
Yes.
Good evening, everyone. Kai Collins, 127 South Telegraph Hill Road. One quick question on the curriculum. So this starts this fall. Have our teachers, my son's going into 5th grade next year. And when you guys sent the email with the broad overview, I looked at it, I'm like, what is everyone freaking out about? This is not that big a deal. So I asked, is there a more detailed version? And then I found the detailed version. You guys pointed me to that. And then I found out my 10-year-old was going to learn, you know, about sex and where babies come from and STDs and teen pregnancy. And then it blew my mind. And I went to my husband. I'm like, he's going to be 10. A lot of kids in the 5th grade leave, you know, all but leave when they're 10. So for a 5th grade year old boy, my boy, I kind of just wanted to, you know, I would want to know that that was coming. So what you sent was totally insufficient, because if our teachers are going to be teaching this, and if it's new to them, I definitely want to talk to maybe one of them. How do they feel about this? Are they on board with this? I mean, what are our fifth graders learning now? Do they know what mom and dad did to bring them into this world? Because I just want to get ahead of all this stuff, right? It's not my problem isn't necessarily that the government thinks they should know this. I just need to be able to have these conversations. I need to know what he's going to learn in school. So if he starts acting differently or says things, I know where it's coming from and I can address these things. So that's number one, is the information you're communicating is totally insufficient, because the broad overview was, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm going to let it just go because it's not a big deal until I ask. And I'm like, you know, is there a more detailed version? And then I find out what it is and it blows my mind. I mean, 10 years old, you know, so I'm still trying to wrap my mind around this and keeping an open mind because, you know, I want to be open with them and I want to have these conversations. So just keep that in mind, communication, let us know, bring us in. I know we make a big deal of things and sometimes it's probably advantageous to just say, look, guys, relax. The government's making us do this. We really can't do much. But if you bring us in and we can have an open dialogue, it's probably best for the kids, right? And I'd really be interested to talk to the teachers also who are going to be teaching this new curriculum if they're not learning this now. So that's the point on this. And then there's one more thing. I got to read it because, okay. So it has come to my attention that an impressive number of residents in town have a number of questions and concerns about who is Kin G. I know Kin because I became involved in the RAGE efforts when we were looking for a house in Homeville and I saw all the signs with the monster power lines. So I lent him my vote in his charter commission endeavor in this past election cycle. It would still be a challenge for me to explain to you what I voted for. I believed that I voted for a guy who had Homeville's best interest at heart. What I'm discovering is that the caution tape may be all over this thing, but maybe not. I understand that the five commission members were recruited by Kin G. They ran unopposed when it came time to fill in all these little circles. I filled them in. There's nobody else to fill in. I thought this was a non-political initiative, but now I understand that Kin was on the front line of Prakash and Kathy's campaign for township committee and they won. And so it seems his interests may be both personal as well as political. With this in mind, I do want to go on the record tonight and ask the board if perhaps Kin's connections have also touched our school district. I'd like to understand if Kin G made contact with any of you during your run for a seat on this board, or if you had an opinion on the recent reorganization of our current board members. If anyone is willing or able to comment on this, I would really appreciate clarification from you so that we can all better understand what his involvement may be, if any, with our Board of Education. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Christy O'Connor, 10 Spring Valley Drive. I just wanted to bring up the assembly that we had at the high school on Friday. I believe the presenter was Mikey Fallon. There was some really concerning comments on a Homeville parents Facebook group. Some parents were raving about it, that their children came home so excited. Some parents were very upset about it. Their children were crying. Some parents were upset that we weren't given information ahead of time. So I had to do some research. And I remembered that there was a speaker at Indian Hill last year, and it was the same guy. Now, I understand, I think the gist of his message, or at least the title of his presentation was just be me or just as you are. But I want to read you something that I found on his Facebook page. So this is our presenter, Mikey Fallon, and he was responding to a shooting. I'm tired of men and America's obsession with guns and all those other countries obsessed with guns and killing each other. And some days, like today, I pray for a virus that will only affect the Y chromosome, and all of us men would disappear. I pray for this on days like today. These are some pretty radical statements. And this is a man that came to our high school to speak to our students. I'm sure some of you are totally okay with this, but some of us aren't. There's some really radical stuff going on. Do we vet these people before we bring them in to speak to our impressionable students? We need to be on guard. There's really crazy stuff going on right now. And I know some of you are on top of it, but unfortunately, some of you aren't. So I ask that we look into this guy. I would like to know what organization he's from. Is he just a single guy that approached our district to speak? Who sent him here? Who does he represent? This is important stuff, and we need to vet these people. And parents need to know who these people are speaking in front of our kids. Thank you.
I would just like to say that if you did have concerns, that the best thing to do is follow the proper chain of command. And I would recommend that if this happened in the high school, to speak to Mr. Kokoda as a first step. Really coming to speak to the board about it would be the last step after you've gone through all the different administrators. But that's what I'd recommend you do.
I appreciate those answers, but it's very frustrating to get those answers because part of this is to raise awareness amongst other parents. So if I can be alerting other parents, I'm going to take this opportunity. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm just alerting parents about what the proper chain of command is. Thank you.
I want to hear from any parent at any time. I totally disagree with you. I'm putting that on the record. This is a public place where people can speak. Thank you.
I didn't say she didn't have the right to speak. I said, if there is a concern, the first step to go, of course, is to the high school principal. And I think it's important that we let people know that they definitely have a venue and an area to speak and be heard. And it's very important they know that. Thank you.
And we're the last line of defense for the kids, Ms. Urbanski.
I understand that, but okay. Let's go through the steps. And I'm always here. I will definitely be here, but okay. You don't have to start at the last line of defense. But
please don't forget.
I certainly haven't.
Hi, Jill Perez, 6 Sweet Briar Lane. I'm just, again, addressing the masking, right? So we know that we're going to have the choice, which is finally, right? 2 years later, we're finally given this option. And I just want to reflect on it for a moment because our kids have been dealing with this for quite a while now. And I'm just going to start with a quote because I believe in the power of vibration and sound. And I really do choose my words carefully. So this quote says, too often we underestimate the power of touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or the smallest act of caring, all of which have the potential to turn a life around. And the quote is Leah Buscaglia, who was a special ed professor at the Department of Southern California. He has since passed, but he actually had a course in which he was called Dr. Love because he wanted to stress the power of connections and building relationships. And so I think we all have a responsibility to look at the fact that we have denied our children smiles, we've denied them touch, and we've denied them some simple humanity. So we need to look at this and question, you know, are there some consequences now? And when I became an educator, and even now, right, we take this approach, one size does not fit all. And I strongly adhere to that. I think that that is the only way to work with children. Yet we haven't taken that approach at all, right? We said, nope, masking is the solution. And then the media tells us that the vaccine is the solution. And so it's this, nope. This is what we're doing for everyone. Does it matter? And we really need to look at this, right? Because we are living through some very interesting times where we're not looking at people as humans. We've devalued them, and masking does that. And I really want us to understand the implications of that. Because what we're doing is we're actually saying that people don't have the right to breathe. And then our kids are diseased in some ways, right? Because most of them are healthy walking around with a mask. So why would we do that? And so though it's coming off, we need time to process this, to think about it, and to think about what we've been modeling for them as the adults in their lives. And to go back to that one-size-fits-all approach, right, where we're modeling something so different, right? As educators, we're saying one thing and doing something else.
And in a world where we are all different, right? And we look at the medical community, if I needed a blood transfusion, could I just get it from anybody? If I needed an organ replaced, could I get it from anybody? Could my body have a different side effect to a medication than other people? So we really need to understand what we're teaching our kids, because they're so little and they trust us. And right now the truth hasn't been told because it's changing, right? The truth is the truth. So we're at a point right now where we have to make some really clear decisions, because I see us living in a very Orwellian world. And we can change that though. You know, I remember reading 1984 as a senior, and I even remember my teacher, Mrs. Grow, who taught us to read a book every week. And those books were profound. So when we look at test scores and everything else, I looked at the way she impacted me, that relationship that we built, the critical thinking that she instilled in us when we read books like Fahrenheit 451 about censorship, right? Or The Good Earth, which was about having balance with Mother Nature. Or One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where we looked at an over-medicated population and one that we were drugging. And one that's being programmed. So we really need to understand what's happening. The masks are going away, but we're still living in this world where we're modeling some behaviors for our kids that I think are very dehumanizing. And so I want us to really think about what we've seen tonight, right? So we've seen some presentations about test scores, and I still wholeheartedly believe that all the tests that we're giving our kids is just money that we're giving to corporations. Instead of making our classrooms smaller, we're spending money in places. I'm not saying that some tests aren't necessary, but really, they benefit the pockets of some big corporations. So we need to keep thinking about our kids. We have this lovely celebration, right? Celebrating Homedale's birthday. But we're going to look at that and say, you know, why were we all masked? How do we let the fear get to us? That all the kids and all the joy, we can't even see all their emotions as we celebrate this day. So let's really reflect on some of the lessons in the classes that I heard about with the Holocaust, and understand that we, as you're the board, and I have great respect for you, and I know you have a lot of responsibilities, right? But that responsibility is a lot longer than one page. And I think we really need to just take some time and understand that we are living, this is living history, right? I mean, every day is, but there's a lot going on here. And the other lesson I learned from Mrs. Grove was to always have a book with me. And I try to read a book a month. This one's taken me a lot longer, because it is about someone who's been in power for 5 decades. And when that happens, power corrupts. I don't care if you had good intentions. The framers knew you needed to have set limits when you're president. When someone has 5 decades in and they're the highest person paid in government, problems happen. We're not questioning the policy, and it's at the expense of our children. And I just do want to read from chapter 2, what's called Pharma Profits Over Public Health. And there's a quote here from C.S. Lewis. Of all tyrannies, a tyranny is sincerely exercised for the good of its victims, right? Masking is good for all of us. We don't deserve to breathe. May be the most oppressive. It would be better to live under robber barons than under moral busybodies. The robber barons' cruelty may sometimes sleep, but those who torment us for our own goodwill will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their own conscience. And I'm just speaking on behalf of our kids, because we have a lot to do, because for 2 years, we've denied them some of the most critical things in life. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I'm going to make a movement to adjourn. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to see you.
No, that's okay.
Please go ahead.
Carolyn Hughes, 14 Fairmount Road. Just following up to what Jill said in regards to programming, on the 7th, when the masks are gone, are we going to be done with temperature checks as well? I was just wondering how many COVID cases were stopped at the door with temperature checks, and again, if they're just going to be done. So,
would you like to say something about that, Mr. Howard?
We're looking to investigate all the other mitigation strategies, from temperature checks, quarantining, everything.
Okay.
So you'll be getting information about that from me soon.
All right, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
The plexiglass, yes. The mask on buses, I'd have to investigate that because from what I... All right, we'll be looking into it. Thank you.
Okay, anything else? We're going to, can I have a movement, a motion to adjourn?
Move. Second.
Show of hands.
Use that. I wanted to hit him.